Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
Guess what, Ellie?
Why are you laughing at us? Just we haven't even said anything yet. She's pissing herself. Why? What? Just said my name. Why is that funny to you?
Sorry, you went into mode. We're consummate professionals, Karen.
Yeah, you are. It was like, oh, okay, all right. I was trying really hard not to giggle.
Well, who's sitting here laughing at us, Ellie? It is, of course, the Karen Arthur. Yes. Hello, Karen Arthur.
Hello, Karen, laughing with us. Sorry, yes. Laughing at us, not with us.
No,
it's
I'm laughing
Karen
with
Arthur.
You. Hello, hello, hello.
The legend, hello. The legend is with us. We are so thrilled that you're here for many, many reasons. I mean, you are a multimedia node. You're everything. She's every woman. She's
having an asthma attack.
I think I am.
She's an educator. She's a fashion creative. She's a dancer. She's a parent of two, grandmother of one, and also the founder of the hashtag Where You're Happy. Now, I'm going to get you to explain what Where You're Happy is, because I tried to write it down. And you went, no, Helen, you've got it wrong.
And I initially misread it as Where You're Nappy, and I thought... I was like, is this an incontinence thing? Is this is this for women before they go on trampolines if they've had more than one child? Is that what this is? But it's not. It's where you're happy. What is where you're happy,
oh,
Karen?
Oh, God, my face is hurting. We've been here 5 minutes. This is not bode well. Where you're happy is about the links between fashion and good mental well-being, and it's encouraging people to wear the clothes that you love, not because it's on trend or because you want to impress somebody, because you love it, whether you look bonkers or not.
And it's a hashtag that's kind of exploded. It's a joy to click on the hashtag, isn't it? And you see people just going, I'm just wearing everything that I like. So when did that start? It's not that long that you've been doing it. So
I've been doing it for a while, but I was talking to myself for a long time. Let's be clear. I mean, it's joyful, but actually, it comes from a place of sadness because it was when. Back in 2015, when I left teaching, I'm sure we'll go into that. Mm. What also happened was that my Aunt Monica passed away suddenly. And I had headed into, it was all going on, menopause, anxiety, depression, grieving the loss of my job, the life that I used to know. And I also missed my aunt. And there was a lot of guilt around missing someone who I didn't see that much, if I'm honest. But we had a lot in common, I suppose. And so I had to sort the will out, and I had to sort out her flat and get it sold as part of her will. And one of the things I did was, she wasn't particularly into fashion, but she liked, let's just say, good quality. So C&A, you know, and Marks and Spencers. St. Michael. God, it wasn't even Marks and Spencers then. So she had a couple of skirts that I held on to. And I found that when I was missing her, I would reach for them. And I also found that if I was feeling anxious and I needed to leave the house, I would consciously choose clothes that I loved. And it was often colourful. Mm. So I would go for things that I like, yellows and orange. I love orange and pink and stuff like that. None of which I'm wearing today. Oh, lipstick. And then I started to talk about it on Twitter. Because Instagram was not really a thing. Instagram was one of those things you just literally posted a picture of your dinner and ran away again. Whereas Twitter was a lot more... I felt there was more of a community there. So I started to hashtag where you're happy. And for a long time, I felt like I was talking to myself. But I also then started to curate the life I wanted. And one of those things I noticed was I loved talking to women about fashion. I loved making clothes for women. And that connection that you have in the consultation when we're talking about how we feel about our bodies as we get older and all that, all those hang-ups and stuff like that. And Where You're Happy kind of became part of that. It's about it's about, I'm going to say bunning. I've said it now. There it is. It's about, women have done a disservice, aren't we, when it comes to fashion, because fashion isn't about how you feel. It's about getting you to buy the latest thing.
Mm.
And often there are rules around what you should wear and what you shouldn't wear if you're a certain size and all that bollocks. It said it now.
Yeah, you can say bollocks.
You can say all of the swears. Right. Karen. Yeah, come on in.
You can say big hairy arseholes for all I care.
I'll leave that to you. So I feel like, and as we get older, it feels like fashion doesn't tend to cater for us. I remember, you know, there was a time before COVID, youngsters, and going into, let's say, a shop and taking 10 items into the change rooms and not finding one that I liked, that looked right, that felt right. And just playing on our insecurities and our fears, almost not even playing on it and feeding them.
Mm.
Whereas Where You're Happy is literally, this is what I want to wear because I love it. I wear this because I made these trousers. I wear this because it's secondhand and I love the colour. I wear these earrings because they're huge and bonkers and colourful. I might wear something because somebody gave it to me and I really like that person, or because I have worn it on every single holiday. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like, and that's a much more sustainable way to use fashion as well. I think we have clothes in our wardrobe that we don't wear because we think we're supposed to save them for best. That's the generation I was brought up with, certainly. Like, I'm waiting for a time. What are you waiting for? You're in the middle of a global pandemic and you're still alive.
Yeah, put your wedding dress on. Get down.
Do it. Get down Sainsbury's. Absolutely. Honestly, I'm a big fan of, people call it dressing up.
Mm.
I refuse to call it that because it's not. That's just the way I dress. And sometimes the thing is, you've got to. It takes an amount of confidence because you've got to not give a two figs what people think of you.
Mm.
You know.
Do you have much, shall we say, feedback from people? Do you ever get
all the time?
Really,
all the time. And this is the thing. Before, you know. I keep saying before COVID because it does feel like a different time.
Yeah.
But I honestly feel that when you dress the way you want to, you empower other women in particular to do the same thing.
Mm.
And I've lost count of the number of women who, you know, would say, oh my God, I love what you're wearing. Or I also say to, you know, I think I'm a big fan of compliments and I'm a big fan of taking compliments and not trying to make yourself small once you know, oh, this old thing. No, I made an effort to wear this. Bloody notice it.
Ta-da!
But also I get a lot of feedback, obviously, on social media because I get DMs and people saying, when I do the Where You're Happy Christmas challenge and that kind of thing, people just having fun. Fashion is supposed to be fun. You're not supposed to, you know, it doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, fashion doesn't matter, but it is so important in terms of, we miss a trick when it comes to, I'm pointing, that means it's important.
Yeah.
Stabbing.
She's pointing very seriously, listener.
We miss a trick in that it's just one more thing in our arsenal of self-care, you know, kit that we could use to help us feel good. Think about all the people who wore pyjamas all through lockdown and felt like shit.
Mm.
And I knew that if through lockdown I didn't get dressed, my already precarious mental health would plummet.
Mm.
And I encourage people, you know it works, but I understand, you can't be asked as well. I get it. But it works.
Yeah.
You know?
And it doesn't have to be a massive leap from going from, you know, jeans and a Breton top. It's a sort of thing like, I'm just going to buy some really ridiculous earrings or some vibrant green eyeshadow or something like that, that sort of just gives you that bit of joy. And I see it, like, because I have a, like, my fashion account, and so many women have got in touch going, oh my god, I wore shorts for the first time, or I've done something that I thought I wasn't allowed to do.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
it's the permission thing. Why do we need permission? We're big grown-ups, you know. We can make decisions. I can drink at 8 o'clock in the morning if I want to. I'm not going to, but I'm just saying.
I can eat 5 miles for lunch. I would love to. That's why I'm not going to.
But, you know, we're grown-ups. We can make decisions for ourselves. Who said that we weren't allowed to wear... Do you know what I mean?
Well,
who said
that we're not allowed to wear miniskirts? Just to play devil's advocate, I would say, well, the problem is, though, as you've said yourself, you get feedback. So I think maybe some people be worried that, well, it's all very well saying you should just wear what you like, but what if you put on the wacky shirt and the little skirt and the high heels, whatever, and you go out and a stranger calls you a name, or some, you know, or your mum makes a rude comment, or you know what I mean? What if I'm not saying my mum would do that, by the way, if she's listening. I'm just generalising.
I will say that it's not strangers that say things. It's usually people who are close to us. Right. It'll be somebody at work, and it's people projecting. Often people used to make comments about what I wore. I mean, I was a lot more conservative at work, but I really loved my fashion, so I was a little bit out there in that sense.
Mm.
And someone always made a comment. And I know that's about you, that's not about me, you know. But I would also say that where you're happy, you don't need to see it. It doesn't need to make sense to anybody else. So I always say to people, start in your knicker drawer.
Mm. Yeah.
We have knicker drawers with knickers that shouldn't really see the light of day.
Mm.
Why have we still got them?
Mm.
I would say, look in your knicker drawer, chuck out all the shite, you know, chuck out the ones that are falling apart or don't fit you very well or that kind of thing, because they're just there. And get yourself, and leave, let's face it, you only need three pairs of knickers, the one you wash, the one that's drying, and the one that you're wearing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I once lived with like one pair, because when I lived in a different lifetime, again before COVID, I lived in Thailand for a few months, and I lived in a little wooden hut. And one night I was drunk as usual in my little bed with my mosquito net, and I heard all this rustling, and I was like, oh, I can't be fucked to deal with that. I can't have to get out of the mosquito net. Fuck it. And I was just wearing a pair of knickers in bed, and I woke up the next day and fucking rats had eaten all my
clothes.
And I was like, Oh no. So then, and I was on this tiny island. So there was no C&A, unbelievably.
Or Marks and Spencer.
Yeah, nothing. So I had
M&Co.
The one pair of pants I was wearing and my bikini pants. And those were the pants I wore for weeks
there
and weeks.
You go.
And you know what? It was fine. I rinsed the knickers out. I wore the bikini most days.
I'm glad you had
went
that.
In the sea every day. I was scuba diving anyway. So
it was
fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we should all live like that, that's what I'm saying. Let's not burn our knickers, won't
we? Let's not, guys. Let's not.
I must say that's one of the first things I did when I became single. I was like, I need some really fucking cool knickers. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've still got my big knickers for those days that
big
you just
knickers
want,
are great.
You want knickers up to your boobs. But I must say, like, if you've got a good bra on and a good pair of pants, you just walk that inch taller. Yeah. Like, it is a really lovely thing.
I'm a big fan of beautiful lingerie that is not necessarily going to be seen by anybody but me.
Yeah.
Because it's my little secret.
Mm.
So I could be wearing, you know, I don't know, black tracksuit from head to toe.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with black, by the way. But also have on my, I don't know, Rigby Impala or whatever floats your boat, matching lacy gorgeousness, because that's mine. That's my where you're happy. Doesn't matter about anybody else. This is the thing, is that the other thing about where you're happy is that people quite understandably assume it's just about wearing vibrant colour. It's not, you know, it's...
Because I was going to say, my where you're happy would basically be a duvet, maybe a bin liner for warmth and blackness. That would be my ideal outfit. And then just like nobody to look at me.
It's choosing clothes that bring joy to you.
Yes.
Mm.
Done.
Yeah.
Full stop.
I love a massive puffy coat, don't I? With an absolutely like fucking stupid, like a hood so stupid that people are compelled to comment on it.
You know,
right. That looks fucking stupid. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's good, isn't it?
Brings there so much joy. Look at my hood. Look at my mess of hood, Helen.
It's ridiculous.
It brings joy to other people, like you said. Like when, as I said before, when you are very obviously wearing what you want to wear, people smile, and they're not laughing at you. They are literally, oh, And you can see the light bulb going. And I love all that. I think more people... Yeah, I want the whole world to do so, I think.
And if you do get a negative comment from someone, what do? Do you just ignore it? Do you tell them to go fuck themselves?
Have I had a negative comment. I think people try to make jokes about what I'm wearing, but my confidence is off the scale with my clothing. You can't touch me when it comes to how I feel about clothes, because I know that's you. I'm over 60. I don't give a shit about.
Well, I was going to say, have you always had that, or did there come a point? What age, kind of, where you just sort of went, oh, hang on, let me just check. Oh, I've got no more fucks to give.
I will say, I had to go into anxiety, depression, menopause, therapy, leave my job. My world had to hit rock bottom. Grief. Mm. All of that had to happen before I can honestly say that. I started to do some deep dive into, you know, what was going on in my head and came out like this.
Mm.
So when I was teaching, it was about keeping up appearances. I wore clothes that I wanted approval. I wanted outside validation. I know I'm stylish. I get that. I've always loved fashion. I've always been stylish. And I liked being complimented for... whether it was a head wrap or earrings or that kind of thing. But this time around, I realised I had to, and I'm not suggesting that everybody needs to have depression to, you know, to become confident.
Yeah.
But I was forced to look at myself. I was forced to look at my motives behind things. And that's when it got to, yeah, I really don't care what you think. So when if people are brave enough to make comments to me, either I don't hear them, or it's just, I'm, okay, that's...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like, okay,
or
that's
as you.
Or
say, it's, yeah, that's not about me. You. That's
everything
else
to do with you. And that's fine.
Mm. I have learned as I've got older, and I'm probably 40 or 50 years younger than you, Karen. I have learned that it's always about them, whether it's about your clothes or something else. It's never about you, is it?
It's never about you.
Yeah.
And I didn't
Which
know
is annoying, because I'd like to believe everything was about me, but apparently not.
Well, the thing is, you don't, when you're growing up, a lot of the women I speak to, my clients, when they come to me and I make clothes for them, the conversations we have around how do you feel about your body are hang-ups from decades before, where someone, usually a guy, has made a comment about their fat neck or their... you know, fat legs or... and they've internalised that. So they don't wear skirts over a certain, you know, length, or they wear clothes up to their neck because they don't want to show... I mean, what?
Yeah. Because they're deep scars.
They're deep scars and words hurt.
Yeah, they do. Because I grew up in Australia where everyone was very thin and sporty and... you know, didn't wear very much because it was very hot.
Mm.
And I was a chubby child and I got told, oh, you're a big girl. Oh, you like your food. Oh, you know, look at your thighs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I found that it took years of therapy and trying to build my self-confidence back to kind of get rid of those comments. But, and especially the women who contact me by Instagram, they just, you know, they're so broken by those comments. And I think that's a really hard thing. But what I love now is on Instagram and other social medias, you can create such a positive force and all those sort of voices are making big waves. And just, and as I say, just little things like, you know, yeah, just choosing a few things for yourself just makes a really big difference.
And I think Instagram social media gets a lot of bad press, but we forget that we can curate our Instagram feed.
The
algorithms, if we magazine. Like certain things, then the algorithms are going to just show us more of that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas the new year is a really good time to cull your Instagram feed, so you only see what you want to see.
Yeah.
You know, you and that, and you're very intentional about what you like. And what I love about it is that the social media is full of, I don't want to say alternative images, because that's not what I mean. I mean all shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you seek those people, then they are the people that are going to turn up in your feed, which means you're going to have a much more healthy outlook on the way that you look, but the way you show up in the world as well. And that will make you more confident, you know. Whereas if you're always liking pictures of skinny 12-year-old models, then... you're always going to see skinny 12-year-olds.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes. And I wanted to talk about another thing you do, not so much fashion related, but you also host a podcast, Karen, called Menopause Whilst Black. And I wanted to talk about, now, did that start because you felt perhaps that was an area where there wasn't that image existing in the social media, or how did that all come about?
I'm going back to tragedy again, aren't I?
Where everyone likes lunch shake.
But I think menopause whilst, I know that menopause, first of all, I still find it surreal when people say, oh, you host a podcast, because I'm like, who? Right, that would be me. It came about because in 2020, when George Floyd was murdered, and Instagram became, you know, diversifying your feed was a thing that was very trendy, and we had the summer of black squares, and everybody was taking pictures of the anti-racist book that they were reading and all that kind of stuff. But more to the point, I felt a rage. I felt it was a physical frustration, helplessness, rage, grief, anger, all of that. And so for a few days, I went quiet on social media by my standards. And I'm sitting in my kitchen because we're still kind of locked down. We don't know what we're doing really, do we? We never do. Thank you, Tory government. And making face masks because I couldn't get to my studio, and trying to avoid the news. And it's everywhere. And I was wondering how black women in particular who were menopausal and hot flushing, knowing that hot flushes are brought on by stress, amongst other things, and wondering how they were also coping with their menopause symptoms, and watching people who look like their husbands, their sons, their nephews being killed. I couldn't get my head around it. So I recorded a video. That doesn't sound like the next thing to do, but that's what I did. And I posted it on Instacrack, and I said, the opening line is something like, if you Google menopause and you click images, what do you see? And people did it. And what you saw was a lot of very old white women with their heads in their hands, with very white hair. No one who looked like anybody I knew, and certainly no black folks. And I started to do... I realised that the menopause space was and is, but it's getting better because that's what happens. Very white, very pale. It's, you know, you were only hearing the stories of a very, very small demographic. And so it's just that the more people I talked to, the more I realised that there's something needs to be done about this. And I posted I did a survey. I was asking black British women in particular to talk about their menopause experience, what they knew about it, where were they getting their information from, and the answer was, we're not, you. Hmm. And it became clear that something needed to come out of that. And I remember people saying, there needs to be a podcast. There is an American woman, Omashadi Bernie Scott, who runs Black Girls Guide to Surviving Menopause, which is a podcast. And I'd been listening to her for a year. But it was very American. So it was nothing British. Mm. And I remember hoping someone else would do it. Thinking,
come on,
like when I did the survey, I thought someone with a PhD is going to send me a message, an email, and send me a cease and desist, or tell me they, you know,
get out of my space.
Because the only research I had found was from 2007.
Come on.
And it was 22 women, BME, which isn't even a thing anymore, and only four identified as black British women, and that was research. Mm. I got 250 women filled in my...
Extraordinary,
yeah. You know. So I bought a... buying one of those... You've got a posh...
I think it's called a microphone.
Right, yeah. What are the things called with the thing?
To make the things louder, yeah.
I bought one of them, but not that. And it sat in a box for 4 months. And I just looked at it, and it looked at me, go, hi. And then eventually, I'm just going to have to do this. And my friend... Natalie, who I mentioned before, Nat Lou, said, done is better than perfect. Mm. No one's born an expert. I know.
Sorry, mouth open. What?
I know. Yeah. Because I think when we get to a certain... The older you get, you don't want to be a beginner.
Yeah.
You want to be... You start ice skating, you want to be perfect straight away. You want to be Torvald and Dean. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you... And it holds us back. And actually, you just need to do it. And so I just did it. And here we are, two seasons later, a decent amount of followers, a platform that people listen to, talking in Parliament.
I had a little chat in Parliament.
I know.
Please tell me you egged a Tory while you were there.
I wore my
Tories.
Yes!
Oh my god.
And my little FU walking those hallowed halls.
That's amazing.
Oh, good for you.
And we saw you on the telly box last year with Davina.
Yeah,
and that was a very, very powerful show because that had a massive impact. And then there was the protest and there's the conversations are just getting bigger and bigger.
The conversations are getting bigger. It is really important that more and more people speak up. It's not just... Because there are lots of people who aren't receiving the help that they could get because they're not on Instagram. They're not using social media.
No.
They're not necessarily watching this kind of thing. It is still a very middle class message. Let's be very clear here. We need to reach, everybody, disabled people, people who are the person who's working in the checkout. Everybody needs to receive the same menopause care. And it's happening, but it's not happening fast enough, let's just say.
No, and it feels like it's maybe not as... Like we've heard quite a lot recently about how the care women get when they're giving birth for black women is very often worse and their rates are worse.
Mm.
But we don't hear as much, I don't think, about older black women and what and is there a big disparity in care there as well?
That's the whole thing. There's no research. The research isn't there. Who would know? Who's asking us? No one's. This is the thing I found from my survey is that people were saying, it was just nice to be asked.
Wow.
Research around
to be seen.
Women, full stop, is scant because, God forbid, we have hormones and that makes us bloody unreliable.
Mm.
So to then break it down into, different demographics and cultures and all the rest of it, you've got to... It's got to be money because you've got to chuck money at it and the people who have the money need to want to do it.
Mm.
So menopause is trending in the sense that workplaces are putting champions in place and some workplaces and menopause cafes and policies and all the rest of it. But we've got to keep going and we've got to keep shouting about it and it has to be everybody, not just women. It has to be...
Mm.
I know it's in schools, but that will be very dependent on the person delivering it sometimes or the resources they are given or the backing they're given.
Yeah.
But also men, we need to be talking to everybody.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's just not a thing.
Mm.
Menopause is just, it's not a joke.
Yeah.
You know?
And I'm yet to go through it myself because, as I say, I'm 40 or 50 younger than you, Karen. But but I do think about it and worry about it, to be honest. And I guess I'd like to ask you, really, what do you know now that you wish... Yes, help me, Karen. Please help me. What do you wish you'd known before you went through the menopause or perhaps as well before you started doing your podcast and talking to other women and their experience of it? Like, what... Give us some nuggets, Karen.
Oh, God, so much. Mm. There's so much, honestly, Ellie. It's... God, there's so much. Where to start? I wish I'd known that anxiety and depression could be linked to menopause.
Mm.
I wish I'd known that at the get-go because then I would have had a different
conversation.
See,
I didn't know that. I never really heard that. Right. I never thought about that.
I wish I'd known that mental well-being is, there's a statistic around the fact that menopausal women... are more likely to commit suicide. Something it's a thing.
Yeah,
I wish I'd known that I was a dance teacher. I will say, conjures up different images. Oh. And
I thought you were going to say exotic. I'm a little bit disappointed.
Well, I was going to say conjures up different images for men, but we're not going there. I was a dance teacher, and I always thought I was quite a healthy eater. I ate a lot, and you know, I always reached for the fruit and that kind of thing. As you get older, your body, because estrogen is leaving your body, we are less able to deal with it. Basically, the sugar turns to carbs, and that's what one of the things that puts weight on. Mm. So I've had to completely flip my idea of what I have for breakfast on its head, basically. So, you know, lots more protein, you know. And it's made me rethink how varied my diet is. Don't get me wrong, I'm, you know, yesterday was a complete carb day, like panettone for the win.
Oh, yes.
I also feel that my background stood me in good stead, because I've always been someone who stretched and exercised and did yogury things. So it's meant that tweaking my how I exercise hasn't been too much of a jump kind of thing. I wish I knew that perimenopause was an actual word, because I only found that out when I started to do...
It's actually my drag name. Oh, well. I'm perimenopause.
God, you know, and that... hindsight is a wonderful thing. Everything I know about menopause, about my own menopause, I've learned after the fact kind of thing.
Oh, so it's like that. The light
I split with my partner when I hit perimenopause. I didn't know that. I literally woke up one day and like, yeah, fuck this shit, I'm not doing that anymore. Amazing. And I was 44.
I'm 44.
Peter, get out.
You get to a point where you're like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And I was with my partner for 20 years.
Wow.
You know, I mean, it was a shit joke, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But it was, I was like, I thought it was me, and I thought, oh, this is just, I thought I was having an existential crisis, and I thought I would, you know, what have you got to complain about? You have 2 holidays a year, and you've got 2 cars, and you've got a house, and all this kind of stuff. I was deeply, deeply unhappy. And he wasn't a nice guy. There's that as well. But it got to the point where I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. I literally switched.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad.
But in that way, the menopause, it sounds like you're saying there was a positive thing. You don't regret that, right?
So I
that,
don't.
So that was almost like a superpower thing,
almost,
right?
Like a point of clarity. Like
make a habit of not regretting anything. I strongly believe that every single path decision that you make makes you the person... Wow. Talking now.
Good for you. Honestly, I had some dodgy prawns in 2015. I'll take that back in a heartbeat. I'm joking, of course.
Such a
inspiration. You're an inspiration.
That takes really fucking big guts to walk out of a marriage, because so many women stay because it's okay, and they don't want to leave the house, or they think it's better for the children, or they will make all
the kiddie.
They will put up barriers for their own happiness. They'll go, but I'm gonna do this because that's better for everyone else, and it's very hard to
but
go,
that's what we're taught.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When we are taught to nurture, we are rewarded for being kind and giving to others.
Yeah.
So when you leave, you're the baddie.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Home wrecker, we weren't broken
married.
Home. Yeah.
I would have given my eye teeth, which would have looked really weird, to, mm-hmm. if he had married me. And now, very glad that we didn't, because it meant it was a lot easier.
Yeah.
But we stayed together for the kids. The kids know.
Yeah.
They are having a miserable time too.
How old were they when you...
They
when you
were split? 11 and 15, coming up to 16. They know.
Mm.
The best thing I did, you know, for them and for me... was to not be with him anymore. Because, and what switched for me was that I realised that my girls were watching a relationship that they would replicate in their future relationships. And I thought, no, I don't want them to meet people, manipulative partners. Like, I don't want them to do that. And so I had to model the life that I would want them to lead. You know,
I've said that to friends before. I've said, would you want your daughter, would you want her partner to talk to you the way he talks to you?
Right.
because you really are potentially engendering that. If you,
and I and for years I was petrified that that's what would happen, that they would meet people who were just like their dad, you know. And I feel, and it was a switch. It did feel like a switch went off, you know, in my brain. And it wasn't easy. I'm not trying to dumb this down, but you know,
you're brave, don't click your fingers and all of a sudden. Yeah.
But once you start doing one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing, and then there's this like snowball effect.
Mm.
But I suppose what also happened was I then substitute, what I did is I put all my efforts into my girls and my work. So I didn't put any, I didn't put myself in therapy. I didn't do anything for me. I was just like, I've got to keep the house. Got to pay the mortgage. You know, got to keep my kids happy. So that's what I did. And so we all know that you can't ignore this shit, can you? It comes, it gets you in the end. And that was what, that's when menopause arrived. So menopause arrived around the same time that my brain was like, okay, so I've held you off for 10 years now. You've had your time. Now I'm going to lick you down. And that's exactly what it did. And it took everything away. You know, that my aunt, my job, my sense of self, full stop. I completely lost myself. And therapy helped me to kind of build that back up and silence. Because let's face it, I had fuck all to do. Didn't have a job, did I? I was fine employed.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah. Really interesting.
And how did you find, one of the things that I think is another boundary is, how did you find your therapist? Because there are good therapists out there, but there's some shit ones as well. How did you know that that was the right therapist for you?
I think that you should shop around therapists because they're bloody important.
Yeah.
And I went to three in the end. The one that I ended up with was recommended to me. For me, my criteria was they needed to be near my house.
location.
I don't recommend that as a recommendation. For me, I was so riddled with anxiety that I knew that it was the only, sometimes it was the only reason I left the house every week.
Right, yeah.
You see, so it had to be walking distance.
Yeah.
But I went to this woman, and she's a black woman. And I didn't realise at the time how important that would become. I also thought that I'd be in therapy for 6 weeks and then I'd be fixed.
Cool.
But how I knew, I walked in, I sat down, her room was, I think, yellow, and I just felt held. And, you know, at the end of our session, she said, so, you know, if you decide, I went, no, I'm here, babe. You got me now.
Yeah, awesome.
You know, and what was great about her, I'm laughing now when I think about it, but once I'd finished, she said, well, you tell a good story, but how do you feel? And I hadn't got a bloody clue because I'd spent years not knowing how to feel. So I had to learn, I had to relearn what it, which is a very odd thing. She said, you tell a great story. And it hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah.
How do you feel? I don't fucking know. So 3 years I was in therapy. best money I ever spent.
And you were saying best it turned out to be important she was black, but you
it
didn't
know
that.
It was important because when it got to... I started talking about one thing. I thought I was going to talk about the fact that I'd left work and all that kind of stuff. And you end up talking about your dad, didn't you?
You know, that old crap. Yeah,
and my partner, and the fact that my partner was my dad, and you know... Mm. Not literally, obviously.
I was going to say that. I think that'd take more than 3 years. Sort that out. Fucking
you know. It became important because we were talking about colonialism, we were talking about my parents' upbringing, we were talking about how important it was for me to be a teacher and why that was a status that certainly parents, African diaspora and parents, find really important, find it, you know, important job, doctor, lawyer, teacher, status jobs. It was, and it meant that we started on the same page. I didn't have to explain anything to her. I didn't have to explain how I always felt the need to fit in. That I never quite felt black enough for some people, and I never felt white enough in other settings. And I didn't have to explain that. She just knew. Mm. So we started here rather than down here. You know, it was never uncomfortable. Oops.
So basically, saved you money.
I could have been there for 6 years.
Now
I would say that I think it's important for black people to have black therapists. I do think that. Mm. I think that if you're, you know, it's important to have someone who gets you. And if that means that person looks like you, then you know, oh, so be it.
Because it essentially is connection, isn't it? You have to feel heard and you have to feel safe with a therapist, because they're, you know, I know friends have had negative experience with therapy, and they needed another therapist to deal with the therapist that fucked them.
I've
even
just
more.
Remembered that I did have therapy before that when I was I'm laughing because it was awful. I was with my partner at the time, and I wanted to go for couples counselling, and we got as far as I booked it, and then we were leaving, and he said, "We don't need therapy. You need therapy." I mean, he was a piece of work.
He sounds great.
Well.
I just can't believe you left him.
I know, right? So I ended up finding a therapist. I went for 4 weeks. It was... There's different types of therapy, aren't there? And it was the one that they don't speak very much. They just listen. I think it's a psych... I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, all I could think about was she had this really high hairstyle. Like a salt and pepper hair, and I just wanted to give her some gel and kind of and I was judging what she was wearing. It was awful. Yeah, I remember
not
that right. So cost my bloody fortune. Yeah.
And then just sitting there and not saying it, and every time there's a silence, you just wanted to go bullshit.
And then a couple of years later I actually left my partner and that. Yeah. This poor woman.
Aww. Bless her. Well, I mean, I know we've talked about, I mean, menopause is incredibly hard, and obviously some people get 50 symptoms, some people get 2, other people cruise through it, etc. But what do you think it has given you, though? Because you speak so positively about it. You know, what are the superpowers of
the
menopause?
The superpowers of that don't give a fuck gene. Mm. It's just...
Maybe I have gone through the menopause and realised...
You were born menopausal, Ellie. Yeah.
I think you have. Literally. It's allowed me to set boundaries. I'm really good at setting boundaries and saying, yeah, no. Which you have to practice doing, because the first time you do it, it feels really... You want to say, no, but I'll do something else for you instead. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you to realise that you may as well just get on with that thing.
Yeah.
You may as well get on with it.
Yeah.
Because I am nearer to death than not. Let's just put it that way. Mm. You know. There are so many things. I'm just not the person I was... even 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And even though people might say, oh, but you were, because you were loud and you were, you know, you were... I was loud and I am loud and I'm airy, so I can't help myself and all that kind of stuff. But that was all a mask.
Mm.
That was inside. Little Karen was petrified of not being loved and not being approved. That was what that was. Mm. Was now... I'm loud for a different reason. Mm. I have stuff to celebrate. And what you see is literally what you get. I show up as me. This is me. I'm my, what is it, full authentic self or whatever you want to call it. I can't not be.
Mm.
You know, and what that's given me, it's given my girls. Because my girls know this is the Karen they know. This is the mum they know. The person who said, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Mm.
Whether it's, you know, job or relationship or whatever.
Or even what I love before we start recording, you were saying, you said, I'm not cooking Christmas dinner. Oh. And now they cook you bloody Christmas dinner. Bloody brilliant.
Yeah, that's great. That literally was... And the thing is, I thought it was a big treat. So I basically paid a shitload of money to take us all off to this hotel in Ashford, of all places. Me, my girls and my mum. And it was an adventure. I think it snowed and all the trains were cancelled, so we had to get a taxi and it cost a fortune and all this stuff happened. And then Christmas morning we get up and we have our breakfast and then we're waiting in our respective rooms for Christmas for food. And I go to visit the girls in their room, and it was very clear that they're not happy. Mm. They didn't want to tell me because I'd gone on about the fact that it had cost so much money. So in the end, I basically forced it out of them. So what's wrong? And said they want to be home. They don't like it, but didn't want to tell you. So I said, but I'm enjoying this because I don't have to cook. I don't have to go to Sainsbury's.
Mm.
I don't have to get, you know, stressed about everything.
Timetables, peeling potatoes. No, thank
you. So they said, from now on, we'll cook and we'll do the shopping. And that was 10 years ago.
And did you say they were 26 and 31?
They're 26 and they're 31. And they've done it. Brilliant. In fact, it was over 10 years ago. And they've done it every year. I've not cooked a Christmas dinner since. I've not had to go to Sainsbury's. I've not had to go to where Aldi or Lidl or any of that. I've not partaken in any. I've given some money.
Glorious.
And now they're older, we split it. Mate, having older kids is great.
Is it?
My God. The first time they pay for something for you, like they take you to dinner, it's like, what is this?
Brilliant. And are you enjoying being a grandma as well?
Oh, man, it's the best.
Yeah.
You know what I love about being a grandma is I don't remember what it was like. When my kids were, like, so my grandson is two. When my kids were two, I don't remember what they were like.
Yeah.
Except that they weren't, well, he's a whirlwind of energy. They were much more acquiescent. Mm. But also, I was teaching and in a relationship that was starting to go downhill. So I don't remember being present.
Mm.
I don't remember. No, I was always thinking ahead.
Yeah.
And you'd fucking tired.
You know, I was knackered.
Yeah, and you're in the fog.
Whereas with my grandson, he forces you to be in the room.
Mm.
So you're being as silly as he, you know. I mean, he's just learning. But, you know, and it's wonderful. No one tells you what it's like to be a grandparent. They just say, oh, it's great. But you don't know it until you're in it. And it's like, oh, wow, so I'd kill for you, right?
My mum said that. She said, I knew I would love your kids. I knew I would love them. Of course I would, but I didn't know I would feel this depth of emotion. That it would be as much as, you know, I felt for you and your brother, like this huge, powerful
It's a different kind of love
mm.
that is... It permeates absolutely everything. And also, you can give them back.
Yeah. I think that probably helps with the old love there.
Yeah, like when he stays over and I'm sleep deprived and he's got me up at some stupid time in the morning or he's gotten up in the middle of the night. The bottom line is, I know I haven't got to do that forever because he's going back to his parents. So there's that as well. But yeah, he has helped me to be, I was pretty present anyway, but even more so.
Hmm.
And so I love that. I can be as silly as I want to be.
Hmm.
It's great. Great, yeah. It's difficult to describe because it's out. People listening who aren't grandparents, it's difficult to get that across. And then you're in it and it's like, oh, right. It's like a secret club.
Yeah.
Oh, Well, I look forward to joining in a long time, children, for listening.
Because you're so much younger than me.
Yes, that's right.
Ages.
That's right. My children are 10 and 7. So keep it to yourselves for a bit, lads.
Now, Karen, before we started recording, you said something about dating. Because I want to hear... I need some advice.
Here we go. Oh, why don't we have a new segment? Helen's Dating Dilemmas.
Yes,
oh, exactly. Oh my God, do it. No, the reason, oh my God, I can't believe you brought that up.
You. I've been holding on, I can't
wait. I'm not dating.
No.
This is the point. I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you for advice because I joined some apps.
Oh.
No.
Have you? So
when you say apps, what do you mean? Do you mean like Argos or like, you do mean dating apps?
You've got which one you want. Yeah.
So there's order like from there.
Hinge.
Bumble.
Yes. Yeah. I'm on that one.
What else?
Tinder.
Have you not?
I'm not on Tinder. I feel like Tinder's for youngsters.
Tinder's a bit of a bear pit.
You have to remember, I also was a head of house in a boys' school, so I'm.
You like, might
they're,
see
right. Yeah. Yeah. Or their dads. Yeah. And I don't. Or I don't want to get matched with. No. It's just
you don't shit where you eat. I know.
So I feel like. Oh, I'm just a hopeless romantic. I honestly want... COVID has really scuppered... I don't want to meet anybody during COVID anyway.
Mm.
But also, I feel very... How do I feel?
Horny?
No.
I don't feel horny. I've got a lot of... I've got some lovely rechargeables.
Yeah,
excellent. Very good.
That's what menopause gave me. A new appreciation.
Do you get them free when you start the menopause?
Yeah.
Does it arrive at the post from the government? Yeah. Like a pension.
With your certificate.
Oh, free bus pass and a vibrator. How lovely.
They should get all that.
If you're listening, Keir Starmer, that's what we want. There's a policy for you.
Yes.
You love that one, Keir. So, Keir.
It's given me a fresh understanding of what I like.
Yeah, good.
And... I've had some fun on that. Love Honey is my favourite website.
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
But also, I started watching... What's that, Grace and Frankie? Frankie and Grace.
Have you ever watched that? That's with Jane Fonda.
Right,
So
there's a scene where she... spoiler alert. She sprains her wrist trying to use her rechargeable in the bath.
Sorry, that's so funny.
Love that you know the rechargeables. Environmentally friendly.
You know, battery-operated boyfriend, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Rechargeables,
and,
yes.
So that's how she starts to design vibrators. So vibrators that you don't have to squint at them or put your glasses on to see what setting you've got on your
lap. Yeah, yeah.
So I went on a complete kind of mission for myself to find the right kind of
apparatus
for me, yeah.
Now, there's lots of different... So in my arsenal, there's the clit-sucky ones, which are very focused on your nubbin, and they suck your clit. And then there's the jackhammer, as I like to call it, which is the wand, which you plug in into the mains.
No!
It's so powerful.
No.
That's like a...
No.
Yeah.
The noise!
Sorry.
Oh no. So my criteria has to be submersible.
Alright, so you want
submersible and rechargeable.
Yeah.
And
rechargeable. Yeah. I'm not faffing about batteries.
Yeah. No.
They have to look pretty. I don't like mine to look like they came from a plastic man.
Right.
That's me.
You don't like a really... What, you like a realistic...
No. The opposite of that.
Right. You want a design element.
So the last one that I had that broke. That is now one of my grandson's toys.
Is a
turquoise, like a curved pebble. It's beautiful.
Oh.
It's the design aesthetic for me.
Yeah.
But it's like a clit stimulator.
Okay.
It's one of those.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
No, we're all women here.
just don't take it to Brighton, on the beach.
But it stopped work. I mean, you know, 18 months of work and it just stopped and that's fine. So it doesn't vibrate, but it is in his toy box. And he does love it, but it doesn't do anything.
You might have to.
But he's cute. He just thinks he's a rock.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Fair enough. It was submersible. I'm sure it's very clean. Yeah.
My new one is very tactile, and it's got two little fingers, and it kind of when you It vibrates.
Yeah,
oh, man.
And like, is that like the rabbity ones? Is it
like a rabbit, but not as big. Right. They look aesthetically, they're pretty.
Yeah,
it's just sit on the side of the, you know, the bathroom, and no one would know.
It's fingers. No, these are. I bought at great expense, but it has been one of my favourite things. Is Gwyneth Paltrow's vibrator?
Oh, did she put it on eBay?
Yes.
I don't know. Tell me more.
So the top is like, it looks like a tennis ball.
Okay.
And the bottom looks like a carrot. And it's pale pink, but it's a double ender. So you can either insert the end and that vibrates, or the tennis ball is a vibrating thing. Or you can use it together or whatever. But that is by far my favorite. And it looks like a microphone. That's what it looks like.
Right, yes, I got that in my head.
So what, the carrot goes in?
The carrot goes in and vibrates if you want it, or you can use it externally. Or
listeners, you are missing what they're doing. The gestures are, honestly, I wish this was on Zoom or on YouTube.
Well, I've seen it,
haven't
it?
And so
does the tennis ball go in as well?
No!
No,
how? Where's it going?
I've got two children.
The tennis ball you put on your clitoris, and that has 12 different vibrating sets.
12, okay.
And that's a bit like that vibrator I gave you. Like, it's a sort of a slight jackhammer. No, I got another one from a smaller company called Self and More, and it was just like a little rechargeable. All mine are rechargeables. But
yeah,
they've all got different slots. Yeah. So when I go away, I've got, which cable for that one?
Well, I've got a teeny tiny little bullet one that looks like a bit of lipstick.
Yeah.
For travelling.
Yeah, that's your purse.
Which is no fun if you're staying at relatives.
No.
You know. But
excellent. Well,
but going back to your, what advice did you want to ask? I want to do agony aunt.
How did you get? Because it feels like you got into dating very quickly, but social media will do that for you. Anyway.
No. I did get into dating very quickly. I got on the apps really quickly, and because we couldn't meet, I had a couple of bits of like phone sex and video sex with people, and that was my introduction. And to me, actually, that was a good way because I was still very vulnerable. I was still kind of broken, so
I'm still very vulnerable, if I'm honest.
Yeah. No, I still think, and like when you were saying about little Helen, little Karen, I was like, I've still got that. I need to be loved and nurtured, and sometimes I look for it in completely the wrong place or the wrong man and all that sort of stuff. But I was going to ask you about your criteria or your boundaries, because that's one of the things that my friends say, like, don't put up with this, don't put up with this. This is exactly what I want.
In men or generally?
In men.
Oh, in men, it's got to be trust, hasn't it? It's absolutely got to be trust. But you know what? I feel that any man that I hook up with has to be someone who's comfortable with me, how much I am. I am not about to dim my shine for anybody ever again. And so they have to be someone who's so confident within themselves that my confidence doesn't intimidate them. And I feel, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a lot as well.
My previous relationship and relationships have tried to make me feel shame for being me. So I wasn't me. Do you see?
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm out the box. I'm not going back in. Fuck off.
No. And we're always having stupid ideas. I'm always going, I've decided to start doing comedy. Oh, I've decided to start a podcast. Oh, I've decided to run a marathon. Oh, I'm thinking of, you know, going to Nepal. And he's sort of like, yep. And he'll say, I was wondering what the next thing would be.
Yeah.
And I'll go, and I have been known to say, look, I know, it's a lot, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I know it's a lot. And he says, but I knew it was a lot when I asked you to marry me. I've bought the ticket. I've got to take the ride.
Right, yeah. I want someone to meet me where I am now.
Yeah.
Mm. And I don't want to change my... I mean, Jane Fonda said something like she didn't like herself when she was in a relationship because she changed for the man.
Yeah.
And I really resonated with that because I thought, God, yeah, I don't want to change myself just to fit into what I think someone wants me to be. I want to be me. And so that person, whoever that, if you're listening, you know, that person needs to be grounded enough and confident enough in themselves to go, oh yeah, she's off again. you know,
learning.
And yeah. I like that, and I can support that, and I respect that, and that's one rather than, you know, that's the thing that irritates me. But what about me? And how does what does that say about me?
Yeah,
I like that male egos.
I am so I'm not pandering to any male ego. I'm not doing it, you know. And I also get it's funny. I was journaling about this morning. I was literally writing my list of what I want. I want.
Yeah, good.
And it was also around somebody who's done the work, who knows themselves. I can't be dealing with these egos.
Yeah, it's funny.
On apps, I meet men who are my age, come with some kind of expectation of what I'm going to be like at my age. And I'm supposed to be grateful because I'm single and they're... Have you seen me?
I was Karen.
And that kind of, they make assumptions about me based on the fact that I've got locks or the fact that I'm a Caribbean black woman, you know. I'm not any of those, I don't fit the stereotype that you think I am. And so I they're stuck in their ways. And I've got shit to do. I like new challenges. I like doing new things. I'm excited to be 60. My God. I'm so excited about this year, 2022, and all the things I'm going to do, even though I don't know half of the stuff I'm going to do. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I like the fact that my life is doing that.
Awesome.
That's higgledy-piggledy, guys, just in case
you didn't
know what to do.
Yeah, she's doing a wavy hand. She's either philosophising or she's had some disco biscuits.
Modern dance. Modern
so there you go. Dance. She's answered your question.
She has. No, but I think that's very good because there are times where I wobble and I go, oh, and Ellie put it very well the other day because my relationship was so bad beforehand. When I meet men who are almost good enough, I go, but this is so much better than it was, but is it good enough?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm kind of working through.
And to be clear, that doesn't mean, I don't mean perfect. No. I don't believe that there is the perfect person for everybody because nobody is perfect. So that's an impossible dream. But equally, you don't, I think we all have to settle a little bit to some extent, but you don't have to settle for something that's below what you need to make you happy.
I think
fulfilled.
What we do is we ignore the red flags.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're big.
Yeah.
You know, and my thing is catastrophizing. Is that what I mean? I mean, it's too good to be true. Therefore, it's all going to go wrong. So I may as well end it now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I suppose growth is that I recognise that I'm doing that. I suppose I need to go a little bit further and not do it. But, you know, baby steps, eh?
But then, but sometimes flags are red, man. Sometimes it's not catastrophizing. Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's accurate analysis.
Sometimes the fucking beach is not safe to swim in. Get back on the beach with your pebble. Stick with your pebble on the shore. Get out the fucking water. You're welcome. I should be an agony aunt.
You should.
What was your question for Helen, Karen? What was your.
Just how did you. I mean, did you literally throw yourself back into the dating game?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, well.
I was affronted by my libido, which had seemed to have disappeared. And I was like, I just want someone to fuck me. I just want someone to fuck me and fuck
and
me
And I
now.
Had quite a lot on. I was learning
it was
Italian.
I was like, Ellie, come on.
I offered Pete, but she said, oh, he's not the type.
No,
so,
No, so I wanted to meet men who were nothing like my So my first sort of fling that I had was with a guy that I'm still really good friends with, and he was an artist, and he was Ghanaian, and we're still really good buddies, but he was completely different to my very white male privileged engineering husband, and that was exciting, but also I learnt some boundaries with him, and I ended it after six weeks, but then we've sort of stayed on, so I found that really good, but to answer your question, I just sort of launched in. I had no rules. I was like 28's my youngest, 50's my oldest, and I had dates with people from all different backgrounds, ages and all that sort of stuff, and I wanted to be desired, which I
that's the thing.
I hadn't felt, and like for someone to grab me, like especially, I've had quite a lot of Italians, and then grab me by the arm and say, "Oh, Helen, you are so sexy," and I'm like, "Fuck me," something just exploded. Like,
oh, didn't realise you were actually from Wales. Accent.
Look, awful accent. Sorry. Every nationality I just insulted then. But that's what I wanted.
Right.
And I could get that. You can get it really easily. You can have sex with someone within about 4 hours.
Yeah.
And that's not hard. But it's about your own self worth and what.
Yeah, that, I'm
and
not
what that results
there.
In. Yeah.
I know. I know. I don't feel that. I may have wanted
more
that 10 years
for you.
Ago. Yeah. Longer. But certainly, I want someone who's in it for the long term.
Mm. Yeah, because it's time.
Yeah.
And then
because I've got stuff to do.
Mm. Yeah.
So if you're gonna be, let's settle down. Settle down where? I. You wanna? You coming? Okay. Well, I'm going anyway. So
yeah. This is what I'm doing. It's really up to you. And to be clear, I don't give a fuck either way. You'll come along fine.
That is literally it, you know.
Yeah, Well, I think that's a good, healthy basis for a relationship. Oh, well, my goodness. I feel like we've covered so much, team.
I feel like I'm about 3 inches taller. I feel fulfilled. Yes, exactly.
In an excellent way.
It's a good look. I knew I'd have fun. I knew that my face would ache, and after the first 5 minutes.
Well, you're welcome. Now, we do like to round off, Karen, with a scummy mummy confession.
Oh,
so
God.
This is a story of, it could be parenting failure, it could be grandparenting failure, or it could just be general personal humiliation or embarrassment.
Should I go first?
Please, okay, Helen, go ahead.
So during the Christmas period, my children got to know, I guess, my alcoholic limits, shall we say, in that we went to quite a few parties in that between Christmas and New Year, and I had one night in particular. I was just around the corner here at friend's house, and you know, we started off with a few wines, and the mums and dads were in one room, the kids were in the other, and it did get to 11 o'clock when I was singing and dancing and they're like, "Mum, we've had enough, we're tired, we have to go to sleep." And I was like, "I'm just having a lovely time," and they're like, "I think you're drunk." I'm like, "No, I'm not drunk. And so, yes, so they have become like my, you know, what's it called?
Benchmark.
And they're like, "No, 11 o'clock is too late, Mummy. We have to get a cab home." I'm like,
okay. Excellent. Karen, do you have a story you'd like to share?
Well, you've just reminded me of the first time my kids saw me drunk, and it was just the first Christmas after I'd split up.
Yeah.
And it was New Year's Eve. It was allowed.
Mm.
But I don't remember a lot of it. But I do remember it involved rosé. I was with my sister. And my eldest was back in London. I was in Oxfordshire. My mum lives in Oxfordshire. So I was staying with her. My eldest was, unbeknownst to me, back in London, having the most incredible party in my home. And had invited all of her friends, including a lot of the boys that I teach.
Ooh.
Now, I didn't know this.
Ooh.
So I have a great time anyway. I've got my youngest with me. We drive back. I walk in the house and immediately I know something's wrong. First of all, it stinks of smoke and no one smokes. Secondly, there are things put back in different places.
Oh, there's like misery.
And then I found a camera. I looked on the camera and there are pictures. I'm laughing now. My daughter was 16. I'm laughing now. There were pictures of various drunken antics on this thing. And it was the first time I was being a solo parent. So I had to ground her and things like that. But the funniest thing is that when I went back, so this is Christmas, sorry, New Year's. I go back to school a few days later. And I'm getting my tea at the hatch at break time. And the head of art says, "Oh, I hear you had a fantastic party over New Year." I went, "Yeah, that's my bloody daughter. It would have been nice to be invited." I went, "How do you know?" She said, "Oh, well, the boys were talking about it in art today." I'll say this now in public. I have a little bit of admiration for her because she planned that shit.
Oh, yeah.
My niece came down, travelled down the M40. I'm sure there was weed. I know there was weed involved. Honestly, I know that that took months of planning, and I was convinced that she would never lie to me. I was convinced that I could leave her because I thought she was going to somebody else's party.
Oh.
So, I've grounded her and we sat down and we can talk about it now. Literally half of bloody...
But did the house get trashed or anything? Was there...
Her room was trashed.
Right.
It looked like someone had picked it up and dropped it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Various little things broken, but on the whole, the stair carpet was absolutely ruined.
Oh, no.
And I made her pay for a new one. Yeah. No, I made her pay to have it cleaned. It didn't make any... I ended up buying a new one. The back garden needed re-turfing.
What?
Yeah, because they were all outside smoking and having a great time. Yeah.
What? And
having homes?
Yeah. And farming? But growing the wheat?
But it was...
Oh, because it's wet. And
it was, it was... And the thing is she will now say it was worth it. The month's grounding.
Because,
I mean, grounding in January is nothing, is it? It's mini lockdown. You know, you're like, where are you going anyway? Yeah. She's 16. She's got no money. So, in a sense... She said, yeah, it was worth it. And there's a little part of me... I never had a party at my parents' house.
No, I never had a party, but I used to have just groups of friends around and things would still go wrong. Like, yeah. We had... When I was about her age, we had some friends... And we had a... It wasn't a digital camera in those days. It was proper... Mm. And my parents had these photos developed. And there's, like, my mate just lying on the kitchen floor. Awake, she knew we were taking a photo of her and she was laughing, but she was so high. Yeah. So she's just like face down on the floor, arms first side, laughing. And my parents were like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh. Yeah. Well, the time I made watermelon vodka and Apple just threw up all over the toilet.
Pink, yeah.
Or the time, I just had like four friends in my room and we were like smoking out the window and I didn't want to go downstairs and deal with my parents, but we were really hungry. I think we had the munchies. So I ended up putting a can of chicken soup. I don't even know why I had a can of cream of chicken soup in my room. But I had this can of cream of chicken soup and I put it in a mini kettle to cook it.
that's brilliant.
And you'll be amazed to hear the mini kettle was never the same again and we had to throw it away. So anyway, that's my teenage Scummy Mummy confession.
That's lovely.
For you this week. Oh, thank you so much,
you're
Karen.
Welcome.
You've been such a joy. I can't tell you. Now, where can people follow you and find you?
So if you Google Karen Arthur, I'll come up.
Yeah.
You know.
Are you The Karen Arthur on Twitter, is that right?
I'm The Karen Arthur on Twitter. I'm The Karen Arthur on Instagram. I'm Menopause Whilst Black on Instagram. My podcast is on iTunes and Spotify and all good blah, blah, blah platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your studio.
Else you want to plug? Yeah, you've got studio.
You do something.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I do things, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
So I teach, my favourite thing actually is to teach people how to fall in love with their sewing machine. So I teach in-person classes at my studio in Southeast London, which is beautiful and has been featured on Sex Myths and the Menopause. And I make bespoke clothes for women. So
do you make divorce dresses, Karen?
I do.
Like if someone was going to have a divorce party later in the year, would you make the dress?
Yeah, I make bespoke clothes for women who want to feel great and want a little bit of special, you know, attention to detail. So, yeah, I do lots of... And who knows what I'm doing next? Who knows?
Who knows? But I'm excited to find out.
Yes.
I genuinely know what will Karen Arthur do next?
Oh,
she's going to fucking Jamaica tomorrow.
It's a wild ride.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Off
you go.
Yeah. Starting my 60th year, as I mean to go on.
Yeah. Oh, well, you've, as always, it's been amazing talking to you. You are an inspiration. She's an inspiration, Karen.
I mean, inspiration to everyone.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Helen, have we got to do any admin?
We're up and down the country, LA. We're doing a big show in Newcastle on the 4th of February, Milton Keynes on the 10th. Leeds in March, all over. Go to scummymummies.com for more live show details.
Yes, and that's the end.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really sad. I can't like, it's like when you don't want to put the phone down. Stop the podcast.
Okay,
I'm just going to do it. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Aww.
And I went to three.
Stop the machines.
Yeah.
I went to.
Wait till the spin cycle's done. Yeah.
It's the little pitter patter.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Sorry.
Scurry. It's fine. Yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.